This meeting is now being recorded.
All right, we are back online, and I want to just kind of bring us back a little bit. Where we are on this agenda item is we have had a motion made by Judge Wesley, who also adopted Jake's friendly amendment. His motion, as I understand it, Judge Wesley, is to approve recommendations 1 and 2 on page 39 of the materials.
Correct.
I don't know that we had a second to that yet.
I will second that.
All right. 1 second. The other issue that we were working on was identifying scenarios of how this 22.7 could be passed along to the trial courts. And as Kimberly indicated, the subcommittee adopted scenario one, correct? But we also considered allocating pursuant to the same methodology that's used to allocate the 2% reserve. You now have been given another page of materials. Also, it's labeled 5D up in the upper right-hand corner. Scenario 1 was what the funding methodology subcommittee is recommending. Scenario 3 is the 2% reserve process. And just to be clear, the funding methodology subcommittee does not recommend scenario 2. It is not one that this subcommittee recommends going forward, but it's there as comparison. So that's where we are. Do we want to take the motion first and then have this discussion, Judge Walsh?
Well, I'd like to offer a friendly amendment. I always try to be friendly with my neighbors to the south, because I think the motion ought to encompass what are we doing with these scenarios. And for the record, and the reason for this friendly amendment is we have not, as a budget advisory committee, had a chance to see all the numbers to fully debate these policy implications of what to do with these various scenarios. Indeed, I've just been handed a new set of numbers just this moment. I think we owe the branch more. I certainly think we owe the council more before we say we're for or against any of these scenarios. So my friendly amendment would be that there's a reference to making a deficiency request in number 2 of page 39. My friendly amendment would be that if the deficiency request is not successful and the actual deficit that needs to be allocated to the trial court is determined, then the Judicial Council should refer that matter back to this body, to the Budget Advisory Committee, for us to consider these and other scenarios and then make a recommendation for allocation in that eventuality. But that we not, and we can submit every run sheet we considered, but I think it needs to be clear that this body does not have a recommendation. This body does not feel yet it's had an opportunity to have a full debate of these and a full consideration to make a recommendation on which the council or anyone else should rely. And I think it would be a false move on that part to just grab one without having given us that opportunity. So that's my friendly amendment. If it's accepted, it is. Thank you.
Let me just remind you, though, that the funding methodology committee, when we had our conference calls, we considered scenario 1 and we considered scenario 3. We did see these scenarios. We did have an opportunity to discuss and consider. The numbers were preliminarily until, as they always are. We never see the final numbers when we approve something, but I don't want anyone to think that the funding methodology subcommittee hasn't reviewed and considered these numbers, because we have.
Fair statement. I'm talking about the budget advisory committee. I heard before, and I'm certainly joining that chorus, there's many members of the Budget Advisory Committee who today feel they need more time to consider this and more time to debate it, and that we've not had enough and would like more. And because our recommendation provides that no allocation be made on these scenarios, we have that time. But I don't want us to just, well, let's grab the one that looked best in that phone call. It's a and send that out to the council. I think that would be a disservice.
There's been a friendly amendment. Judge Flau, do you continue to second the motion?
Well, I just, I'm going to admit I was reading two different things. And I was listening to you. I did. I think that the second suggests, or the amendment suggests that we send to the Judicial Council that if it's not backfilled, they allocate it to us. I mean, are you saying that?
No, I'm not saying just the opposite. Just the opposite. I am saying that we haven't had a chance as a budget advisory committee to do the normal deliberate approach we do to considering these, and that we will do that, but we haven't done it yet, and it would be a disservice to send it forward. So all that my motion would say, one and two, as Judge Wesley has moved, and then add that if you can't get that deficiency request submitted, send it back to us. So that, in fact, send it back as soon as you want so we can be considering an appropriate scenario to what to do to come up with a plan B if a deficiency request is not funded.
Isn't that implying that what we will send back is a method for them to allocate that to the court? And is that what we want to do?
At some point, we would have to do that. I mean, I'm hoping the Department of Finance does the right thing, realize it's there, realize that this simply represents a cut to a budget that's already been terribly cut, and that, as I understand the method, they will, when the revenues are short of the allocations, they'll find the revenues to support the allocations. But if not, we have plenty of time before January, which we've set as our deadline for coming up with a reallocation. But that we not pick one now, shorthanded, hoping that the fund it happens to be the right one. We've got a few months to come up with them.
Judge Masanaga?
I participated in the first of the two phone calls that we had, and I recall the first phone call that we had on the 23rd, I believe, that the subcommittee felt very strongly that the message should be sent that this is not that the Department of Finance, this is something that they should correct, and then how to go about sort of pushing that issue forward. And then I had to miss the second phone call because of my trial, but I understand that the reason the second call was called by Judge Earl was because this committee needed to be able to make a recommendation to the Judicial Council for their July meeting as to what the court would do if, in fact, that shortfall does exist. At least that was my understanding from SLACO, too, is that the Judicial Council needed to have this committee make some kind of recommendation. Now, so I respect what Judge Walsh was saying, because that was the sentiment of our first call, is that we should be really sending a strong message that this is something that needs to be taken care of. We shouldn't just absorb it like we've been doing everything else, and okay, it's short, we're going to figure out how we absorb it. But I'm getting two different, so it's unclear to me what, if we need to make a specific recommendation to the Judicial Council as to what the court would actually do, or if we have time, because I prefer to, I think I agree with Judge Walsh, is if we had time, I would prefer to take that, but it was my understanding that they really needed a recommendation as to what the courts would do in terms of some kind of how it would reallocate. So can we clarify that?
Sure. So I did have discussions with Justice Miller and the Chief Justice about this particular issue, and I was urged to have this committee bring options to the council, not just one recommendation, but options for them to consider. And so I asked, that's why we had our call on June 30th, knowing that the recommendation was, as it stands in item on page 39, what would our option be if we had to pass this along to the trial courts? And that's what the subcommittee identified at the conclusion of the June 30th call, was that should this be passed along to the trial courts, The most equitable way to allocate it would be scenario one, is what our subcommittee recommended.
Well, what if we don't do that? What if we just send them recommendations on page 39?
I think that's what your motion contemplates.
I think that's what Brian is asking. And then if we are unsuccessful at getting additional money, ask them to send it back to us for us to determine how it should be allocated.
And we'll make a recommendation for the council on how it should be allocated if we're unsuccessful.
Is that, Brian, is that what you want to do?
And that we would look at it in the meantime.
So there wouldn't be an option that goes with this. This would just be a recommendation. The council can say yes or no, they won't do it. At least we'll know where they stand.
If they say no, you won't have your allocations done in the month of July.
That's my concern, is if the council, if we only present one option to the council and it's rejected, then they will be unable to make an informed allocation because we have only submitted one recommendation. If they reject it, then our allocation would be delayed at least until the August meeting.
Well, that's a cash flow problem then, right?
No. We still provide allocations, except you won't know what to plan your budget for now, the remaining 10 months.
$22 million, it won't be allocated, so it won't be allocated to August. I don't think that would affect anybody here.
Kimberly?
I agree. We were not coming back making a recommendation to cut. So if we need to present options just like any other items, what's written on page 39?
Options.
Instead of just calling it recommendation option A, 1B, and that's what this committee presumably is going to vote on. Option 2, which again we considered, you can put scenario 1, scenario 3, those are the two that we talked about, listed on here, but we're not adopting that, we're not recommending it, we're our recommendation. That way the council sees everything. If they reject our option 1, A, and B, they have something to look at as far as voting on an alternative. Would that meet that requirement? Assigning it to them?
Well, I would think that skips the budget advisory committee as a part of the decision-making process. I mean, if it is correct that there needs to be a second option, we're the ones who should create that option.
And that, again, would be desirable, but as I heard Judge Earl say, we don't want them to have nothing and then have to come out with some other recommendation. If we could make option 2A, say these were considered and rejected, need to go back to budget advisory. But if option 1A and B, that just seems one recommendation. Showing any other scenarios is something that this committee vetted and rejected. That was consistent with our call.
But let me ask, I have heard Judge Walsh, but are folks opposed to getting a briefing from the Funding Methodology Subcommittee today on what scenario one is and what the 2% is? Because those are the two that this subcommittee considered. And I'm hearing folks say we don't want to offer any of those. And I think we should at least discuss them.
Well, I'm fine with discussing them. And I'd be fine with attaching them. It's part of our body of work. I'm just not fine with the numbers changing every time I look at them than making a decision today that I'm going to say I recommend this to the council.
But I think the motion on the table, right, is to adopt what's on page 39.
Correct.
With the addition of the amendment that is included about if addition is successful to refer it back. That's our recommendation. So if that's the recommendation that's on the table,
or consider that we've discussed, and we've discussed them here, we've discussed the subcommittee. Those are options or not recommendations, like any number of options. Benefits item earlier where the
why don't we call the question on the motion table, and then we will talk about scenario one and three.
I'll second the motion. The motion hadn't been seconded as amended.
Any other discussion on that motion? Mike Roddy.
Restate that motion, please.
Motion is to adopt the recommendation on page 39 with the addition, which could be recommendation three, or would, if the deficiency request is not approved, to refer the issue back to the Budget Advisory Committee to make a recommendation regarding an allocation.
Okay.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion. Now perhaps we can walk through scenarios one and three, which were the two scenarios that the Funding Methodology Subcommittee felt were viable, although scenario one is the one. So I'll ask Stephen Chang just to walk through scenario one and three.
If I may, there's someone that we can hear on the line is, there's a lot of noise coming from your end, so if you could either cease that or put your own phone on mute, that would be very helpful. Thank you.
We just handed out Attachment 5D. It's an update to Attachment 5D found on pages 40 and 41. What I've done in columns A through C is to update scenario 1 to now reflect the fact that you are recommending option 1 of item 3. Prior to that, it was the option.
The benefits issue.
The benefits.
So this concludes the decision today?
Yes.
Thank you.
Now, there's a slight, I didn't have time. There's a slight error related to the court that leads to the funding floor. You see, example outlines the $20 net allocation should be zero. All the courts that receive a funding for the net allocation should be zero. So there's a slight calculation error. I just want to point that out. So scenario one is based on court's current allocation, based on whatever the council adopts in terms of final recommendations. The funding floor adjustment. Scenario two is the same, exactly the same. Scenario three is a 2% reserve formula. And you'll see it's almost identical to scenario one. The differences for each court that you'll see in column J, it either increases or decreases generally between 3% up or down, except for Shasta. And the reason why is that option scenario three, the only difference between scenario one and three is that court base allocation related to security is subtracted. And the reason is normally would affect both Shasta and Trinity, but because Trinity gets a funding floor adjustment, it doesn't affect them in the scenario. So Shasta allocation is higher under option one than option three because in option one, their proportion is also, of their security is also included. So their security takes a share of the reduction.
One and three are the same, except it normalizes, it equalizes courts that still have security, and it removes them because there were courts who had security completely taken out of their budget because of realignment, and it does apples to apples on that. So that's really the difference. So it's your current allocation as it's mixed with WAFM and your historical pro rata, and it makes that one more adjustment to equalize courts so that their share of their same operations are compared to each other. That's the difference between one and three.
If you want to see that one, it's item six.
Yeah, it's coming up.
Judge Matsunaga?
Could you just clarify the one and three as to, you know, I see you have the adjustment related to flooring, so those are the smallest eight or so courts that get a flooring amount. And I just want to understand because I think what you're saying is scenario three in column J, that it really doesn't make any difference for those courts that have the flooring adjustment when you said there's zero difference, right? Okay.
Chair,
addresses to the issue of the differences between those two, that Jake was walking through four different ones, and when we got to three and four, when the funding methodology discussed it, the only difference was removal of security-based funding. Judge Borsch, you have a question.
Yeah, Judge Borsch. I think one of the reasons why, if I recall, the subcommittee talked about actually giving dollar figures was so that courts who are affected, which is everybody, would be able to say, this has what is going to stall my plans to improve or better my service to the public. And so, for instance, I think Jake was saying that he'd hope to open another courtroom, but by taking the money away from him, he was not going to be able to open that courtroom. And I think one of the reasons we wanted to come up with numbers was so that the affected courts could put together some information so that the deficiency request letter would have some substance, some factual assertions behind it, so that it just wasn't, hey, give us more money. It's this money is needed because you want us to better serve the public. You want us to open up more access to justice. And we were on that road until we got waylaid. And now we are in a deficit situation, and the best laid plans have gone awry.
How so? Because you know out of one of these four options, you're either hit whatever your numbers are or whatever any court's numbers are from a range, as I think Mike Planet suggested earlier, you have a range.
No, I'm not objecting to the range even, but what I'm saying is unless we give the judicial counsel something up front,
I see what you're saying.
Whether it be a range or a hard fixed number, we picked a hard fixed number in the subcommittee. It doesn't matter. I mean, I don't think it matters. I think it's better if we give them a fixed number, but I don't think it matters when, you know, the dust settles. But if we don't give the courts and the judicial counsel an idea of what the deficiency is going to be, then no one can write some sort of supporting information as to how hard they're hit by the loss of this money.
Tanya from El Dorado. I think sort of another side issue to that is the number of courts may end up in negotiations again very shortly. And I think absent some kind of a hard number, it's really going to be hard-pressed to sit at the table and say, well, you know, we don't know what this is going to look like. We won't know until January. If you're in negotiations now, we're about to go into them. Having something that has gone to the council, I think, would be beneficial for those courts as well.
Are you suggesting that we do anything as a result of your comments, or are you just commenting? Yes.
This is Dish Borskin. I think we talked about this in the subcommittee, which is why we actually came up with an option. But why we put it down low was for the purpose of giving the courts the ability to see what their shortfall could or would be and be able to give some input to the council to help write the deficiency letter. So maybe I'd move that we submit. We could even submit all the three options here and make a recommendation to the council, because here is our range. I mean, people talked about there's either a range here in all three, but at least if we say that we've looked at option one as being the most equitable, if there is such a thing, and not having enough money, that would be the recommendation if, by some misfortune, the deficiency request is done.
And let me just state that I don't think anyone supports scenario two. I think it's just there for comparison purposes. It was rejected. So the real items that the funding methodology subcommittee felt was viable was scenario one and three.
Mike Ronnie.
Send them one and three. Tell them we're not making a recommendation. This provides the range of options, and frankly, it's incredibly de minimis range when you think about it, but we've at least given them the two options and recommend, consistent with number three in the prior motion, that the matter be come back for a definitive decision on the part of this body.
Well, I think technically Judge Boris moved that we submit option one as the recommendation.
I will withdraw my recommendation. I mean my motion.
So Mike Roddy's suggesting we submit, we advise the council that we have had preliminary discussions of scenario one and three as being the most viable.
We're not prepared to settle on a final recommendation consistent with the prior, that the issue come back to this body at such time as we, if we unfortunately need to make a definitive decision based on one or two.
Was there a second to that?
I'll second.
Mike? I think Mike.
Okay.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? All right.
Thank you. Next is item six, page 44 of your materials, and it is merely a discussion item, as we've already recommended the methodology. It represents the 2% allocation calculation of the holdback, the amount that each court's trial court's allocation would be held in reserve as part of the supplemental funding pot of funds. This is just to show you how that is done, and again, it does account for security as an adjustment to bring everybody in a similar operational basis. And I don't know if there's anything in particular that anybody has any questions about. Again, this is more informational. If there's any further discussions, this is the third year of this methodology as it was adopted by the budget working group back in August of 2012. Are there any questions about this issue? Again, it's not an action item. It's just a discussion item. If anybody has questions, to be reminded of the methodology. I think we kind of at length just discussed it and this 2% process as part of our item five issues. Anybody? Anything? So we can move to our next process as item number seven, and it relates to the actual process as required in statute to make a preliminary allocation to each trial court in July, and it has to account for any amounts that each trial court has above its 1% cap. We've talked about the encumbrances process. We've talked about the statutorily excluded funds. This now lays out a process for us to do that, and it has a one-time process and for this fiscal year and then an ongoing process for the future. As you can see on page 47, we've already sent out an email assuming that this date would work. We have to have your information from back from each trial court in sufficient time for us to prepare the council calculations. There is then a final reconciliation that we are recommending, and again, this was part of the group that was had Judge Boris, Judge Hicks, Rebecca Fleming, and Mike Roddy on about process. So number two in the recommendation speaks to this process where we'd have the SEAC chair and vice chair, myself, and two members appointed from the Budget Advisory Committee to sort of review. They would review and provide concurrence or provide questions and comments back to the trial court with any of their encumbrances by November 15th. And then we would have final data received by the 1st, and the council, per the statute, finalized allocations in the January council meeting process. And then in terms of going forward, we've established July 15th as the submission date. Final year-end data is October 15th, and final allocations again prior to the February council meeting. So that's how we see this annual process, assuming that we're not successful in getting the 1% cap repealed or revised as we go forward in our advocacy. Again, this was part of the first one-time process, was to ensure that we've done our own reviews of what folks are encumbering to ensure that we have our own sort of branch review of that process to make sure that we don't go out with something that is reviewed by others that's outside the branch and not seen concurred to. So that was an important internal process to have. Yes, Judge Cope.
My folks had a concern was in paragraph 6, the July 15th date. What they tell me is the fiscal year books aren't even closed yet, I guess the end of July, and, with short-staffed courts, including in our financial offices, it's really tough to get all that information together by July 15th.
The council, by law, has to make a preliminary allocation based on the best information that you have available to submit, and therefore we have no other real flat. I mean, the council that date is not, but the date for the allocation is in July, and assuming that there's public meeting notices and information that has to be gathered, we cannot get that information any later. Realistically, to be able to then provide to the council the calculations for the 1% adjustment. Yes, Judge Leslie.
How does that work for Los Angeles? Our books don't close until late August.
So it's all preliminary. It's all preliminary, and that's why there's an October 15th secondary finalization. So everything is preliminary, and then once all books are closed, that's why there's this later date in the fall for that process to occur.
I just wanted to clarify that.
Sure.
It's fine.
Yeah. Absolutely.
So I'll move the recommendation.
Do we want to I can ask about the volunteers for the, but we can do that after the vote is taken. So we have a motion by Mike Roddy and
I seconded it.
Judge Egan the second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Any opposed? Yeah, Judge Earl is suggesting that maybe we wait until we see who are on the next round of committee members before we ask for volunteers for this exercise. Excellent. So we can move on to item number 8. Item number 8 is the work from a small subcommittee to look at the supplemental funding process. At our last meeting, that was as part of our budget change proposals and our advocacy, we wanted to look at revisions to the 2% process. And I see Mike Planet is distracted at the moment, but he headed up a group of folks who got together. So, Mike, if you want to take a moment to talk about the recommendations of the changes in the supplemental funding process, that would be very helpful.
So we remember the discussion at the last meeting where we're faced with the 1% cap and not getting, and we were getting, 97% of our 2% set aside back, but it wasn't coming to us until March, April, leaving us with 3 months to spend right down to 1% cap. And so now we've been through the first year of that. We know what that's about. And so our group discussed, I probably opened my big mouth at the last meeting and suggested that the sooner trial courts got that money, the better. And our little working group has basically concurred, is recommending that adjustment to the current procedure now. So there's basically, two bites at the apple. One by October, as many bites as you want between the adoption of the budget and October 15th. We'll make
one other. To clarify, applications are due October 1st.
October 1st.
For the first process.
Okay, and then the final decisions need to be made before November 1st?
October 31st.
Yeah, October council meeting.
Get to the council meeting, and then any money left over not allocated to, not allocated at the court to the fund emergency. Would then our recommendation, then the Judicial Council would have that before them to reallocate back to the trial courts in January. So we would get that money roughly 2.5 to 3 months earlier than we got this year. So that was recommendation number one. Recommendation number two is looking forward and looking at the whole 2% and the 1% piece, which is, if history serves us right, those decisions, and that legislation was made before the WAFA model, before we moved to work-based formula for allocating funds. And the two, and the notion, this is really inconsistent with the notion of a workload-based allocation system. So our recommendation, again, we're recommending to this committee that you that we refer the matter to the Judicial Council and recommend that they consider either requesting funding for the program or changing the statute to basically eliminate the 2% requirement. And so those are our two recommendations.
So just understand that the first recommendation that's put before you, instead of having basically four council meetings to make your request, you have two. And so it shortens the period of time from which you have to, you know, understand your fiscal shortfall and get that request before a staff and through the process to the council. Whether folks, you know, that's what folks want to do and sort of compress the time frame, because obviously the sooner that those decisions are made, whatever remaining balance exists gets back out to the trial courts sooner than the March 15th process as it has been now. That's the trade-off. Less time for folks to submit, more time for folks to get the money and build it back into their fiscal plans.
Marco, let me ask a question. How many requests has your office seen from courts within this December, January, February time period that currently exists?
But two.
We had two in the first year, and then one last year.
Yeah.
After December.
So was there any discussion? I was supposed to be on the working group, but I was out of town when the call occurred. Was there any discussion about what's contemplated now that we only have the 1% fund balance? You know, in prior years, most courts had some fund balance that they could self-fund any deficiency. I'm a little nervous now that there's not much there to take care of your own deficiencies with, that we're presuming every emergency will arise in the first half of the year. So I'm just curious what the discussion was there. And
well, that also goes both ways. You don't have the reserves to cover the emergencies, but on the other hand, if you get the money late in the year, you've got to get rid of it before the end of the year, before you lose it in the reserves. So that was most of the discussion.
Clarification. So 2A, which is the recommendation of the committee, is a methodology for distributing the 2% revenue. And 1B is a recommendation that we get rid of that 2% reserve and have the money come directly to the courts and we have the money to spend, and we don't keep the reserve. Am I correct?
One is a current year revision to the process, and one is a statutory change for 15-16 fiscal year.
Two separate recommendations. I'll move 2A then.
Is that Tanya? Any further discussion on 2A? All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed?
I would move 1B.
And I would second that.
Any other discussion on item B, changes to government code section 68502.5?
Okay. This is a question. It used to be that there was some small amount of money in the software trust fund, right? Some percentage.
It was the improvement fund as a set aside that had to be held, and if it wasn't allocated, then it could fund all the programs that were in the improvement fund. It was the improvement fund, right?
Right. This truck
improvement
fund. Right. But that's gone.
Right. Right.
So, I'm not opposed. I mean, the way this is written, this sets up a very weird scenario for all of us. So, But the difference between 1B and 2B is 2B is essentially saying, yes, we do believe there should be some level of statewide fund for emergencies and events necessary. That's the way you're funding, it doesn't make sense, right? We don't have enough money, and so you're taking the money away from us, and we all need to pass it to operate, and so then we get it back. That's kind of weird. But I guess my only concern with 2A or 1B is basically saying, let's just get rid of this concept of having any reserve at the state level.
I think that...
Right, we come directly to the courts, where 2B, I think, is saying we would like to get that rescinded, but we acknowledge we want some statewide something funded. But,
If I recall the discussion, it was let's pursue 1B. If they're not amenable to eliminating it, then let the state fund it and it not come out of everybody's allocation. So if you don't agree with the policy of eliminating it, then do not cause a budget reduction to occur that then has some uncertainty with it being 98% funded, and then you're uncertain about what share you get back. So what do you plan for? I think it was more 2B if Mike, it was more of a contingency against what would be 1B.
Right.
Chris Volkers.
So very good. So Jake's point, I'm confused on what realistically would happen if a court needed emergency funds in, like,
if we voted on 1B, which I support, but what might happen? I mean, what?
As it stands now, the money would already be allocated.
I know. So what?
So.
Happens. We're not
going to
leave.
Deal with the situation as it exists today.
Yeah, we allocated March.
David Yamasaki. I recall that I think at the last meeting there was a mechanism that was established for loans, right?
Dave, I'm sorry, we can't hear you.
There was an issue. There was an action that was taken related to loans as a result of cash flow issues, and that still exists, correct?
That's for loans, not for budget.
Cash flow.
It's for cash, and you have to have a balanced budget requirement in the statute. So it's not a matter of using it to manage your budget. It's a tool to manage your cash within a balanced budget.
Meredith? This came up repeatedly during the small court adjustment discussion, that it takes one high-profile trial in a small court to blow your budget. So if that happens after the first of the year, there's nothing. I mean, where does a small court go for those anomalies in their filings? It happens. It doesn't happen frequently, thank goodness. But when it does happen, there's got to be some mechanism there because there's no way to forecast it. There's no way to save for it anymore. There's nothing. And I just am concerned that I think a lot of courts would be very responsible and they would have their own reserve and they would manage that reserve. But when you get to the smaller scales, that 2% isn't enough to offset some of those big fluctuations that can occur with a high-profile trial or something of that nature.
Jake.
Okay. So actually based on that, though, I think 1B, right, which repeals it entirely, makes more sense. Because even as written now, it doesn't address that problem. The money already goes away in March, which maybe right then you're going to realize you have a problem, hopefully before that. But in a true emergency, you're not going to know until then. And it's already gone. And the issue is not enough if you're in a smaller enough court and you still want to get into that trial late in the year. It's gone. So I suppose at least 1B says we want this repealed. We still have an issue we need to deal with, but at least then we can deal with it as a full issue. Because even if it is necessary.
No, I understand. And we will talk about fund balance policy next and where that goes. So maybe that's part of that discussion too.
So we have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? The motion is to adopt option 1B. Any further discussion? Kimberly?
Just clarification on the recommendation and the motion, it sounds like. In the recommendation, it says I heard what's currently discussed is that 1B is the recommendation, but then go beyond that. So wouldn't it be an and request have them recommend 1B that we still want to have 2B considered? Not an and or, correct? They go hand in hand?
I think maybe it should have been written more as in the event that 1B is not successful, that we are already have approval to pursue this secondary approach, which is funded from the state funds rather than from branch funds.
This is Mike. Yeah, I think that was the sense of our group. This is just the way I wrote it up. So.
But with 1B, we're not getting any extra 2% anywhere.
No.
We're not asking for additional. It's just, wow.
If the committee already decided and that was discussed and it wasn't for, that would be my recommendation, is take it away, repeal it, don't pull it from us, but add to it an additional 2% at a state level.
So it would be repeal it, and your suggestion is that we adopt both option 1A and 1B, or 2A and 2B. Repeal it and request a funding for it.
It's 1B and 2B.
Yes,
it's 1B. Is that the motion on the floor now?
No.
Both?
No.
Motion on the floor is to adopt 1B, and what Kimberly is suggesting an amendment that it would be
one that we do both, that we recommend repealing the government code section, but at the same time requesting the Department of Finance to fund a 2% reserve to be administered at the state level. Judge Walsh?
Given how I learned things went down this year, I worry very much about 2B. The position I kept hearing is, look, there's only so much money. Oh, and there's only so much money now available for the courts. If we suddenly say, take 2% and put it in a statewide fund, we just all shot our 58 courts right in the foot. And it's the very thing we're trying to avoid by getting the 2% back to us early so that we're not stuck at the end. Here we're just sticking ourselves with that 2% at the end from the beginning. So I think it would be a mistake.
So maybe it isn't lost on everyone, but I just want to acknowledge, as Mary Beth pointed out, and as Kimberly, I think, friendly amendment seeks, is repealing the code section eliminates the 2% reserve, and there is no statewide emergency fund for courts to appeal to should they need help, as Mary Beth said, especially the smaller courts. I want, maybe it's not lost on anyone that that's the motion, but.
But as Jake pointed out, after March, there's no emergency fund for courts to go to anyway. So if you have a problem right here, you're in the same exact position.
But this would even foreclose it in the beginning part of the year, too.
Because you're giving it to you at the beginning of the year, so you've got your 2%. At least your 2% you have, and you can plan using that. And if you... Anyway, I'm not accepting any amendments. The motion's 1B at this point in time.
That assumes that 2% of everybody's allocation doesn't get reduced if we repeal the... Seek repeal. Judge Walsh.
Well, I think there's two issues. Is that I think maybe where Judge Walsh was going, and stop me if I'm wrong, is that there's a concern that if we do it in that fashion, that the legislature will then say, okay, you want that 2%, we're going to take it from your allocation and put it in the reserve fund. Maybe one of the issues. The other issue, I think, is that what nobody has said is what happens if that 2% is taken. If we're still operating the same way, and for whatever unforeseen reason, some courts are able to get in and obliterate the fund by, you know, October, we still don't have anything. I mean, it's sick for one half a dozen of the other. I personally would rather have that money in my fund to balance my budget.
Judge Walsh.
Can I ask Blanco, I'm an expert here. So let's say we're under the current plan, we redistributed the money, we've done everything prudently, but in May, Sutter has a quadruple murder case and have to spend a lot of money. Is there zero, but there must be some way that the branch could somehow help them out and then take it from the following year's
deficiency requests to the Department of Finance, but there would be... There's, we are spending every penny we have. In fact, based on prior discussion, we're allocating funds that technically we don't project in our base. So if we had $50, $100 million of truck or trust fund, if we had funds elsewhere, but we don't. We've in order to fund and backfill budget reductions, we have spent every dollar we have. So we've been put into a very difficult position. So short of branch funds, we have to go outside the branch and ask for deficiency appropriation for this unforeseen issue.
There is a government code section that says the council can appoint a receiver for the court.
Or they could do a change of venue to Santa Clara County.
Judge Rush was having a question.
I just had a question. Going back, just, and I hate to confuse the issue, but let me do it anyway. Going back to number 7, with respect to the 1% cap, what happens if there's an excess to the 1% cap? If there's any excess, can that money be set aside as an additional reserve in case of emergencies for courts?
By the way that the statute is set up, it does sit in the trial court trust fund.
So any excess to the 1% could be an emergency fund that could be used? Thank you.
Just so you know that the projections that were provided had about a $900,000 excess above the 1% from the original.
Help on a major trial.
And the 2% has been in the $20 million range, $25 million range. So,
I don't disagree with you, Judge Wesley, that would be potentially available. But it's potentially available. This body's made no recommendation to the council as to how to treat those funds.
That's
so
what I just asked. I mean,
absent that, you know,
but
we'll take the vote. But
you will have a sense preliminarily, you know, when we get the forms and for the July council meeting, we'll have a sense as to what that range of dollars will be, because that will be based on a preliminary estimate.
No, I understand that. I think I'm very uncomfortable not having some sort of a systemic plan for emergency funding. I'm just a little uncomfortable. I'm a lot uncomfortable with that, and that it seems to me that it is more responsible to have a structure in place for that process. And, you know, we'll take a vote. I will be voting no, but...
Mike Planet, do you accept Kimberly's friendly amendment to make it and option 2B?
My motion. The answer is no.
All right.
So I'm going to call the question on the motion, which is approve recommendation of option 1B. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
All opposed?
No.
No.
Three no's?
Four.
Four no's.
Four no's. The motion carries.
Next issue relates to minimum operating and emergency fund balance policy. When the 1% came into effect, we asked the council to deal with this issue, and they suspended the policy for 2 years at the August 31st, 2012 meeting. We just bring it back because now that time is ending, and we offer three options: suspend the policy indefinitely, suspend the policy for an additional 2 years, or eliminate the policy. We feel like we have to have some council action since it was suspended, and that period is ending. Yes, Mike.
Doesn't this seem to be in conflict with the 1% reserve cap? Seems to me I'm going to move option number 3 for that reason.
And I don't know if there's a second. I just want to make a comment. The reason that we had Judge Boris the second, just the idea that if you suspend it, then if we continue to have it suspended, are we continue our advocacy for elimination of the 1%, then there would be value. But if you're to have the policy sort of in place still. Mike,
this was that.
Meaning if we eliminate it, then we default to the 1% and the 2% processes that exist. If we suspend and continue advocacy, I mean, I guess at some point you have to end that effort.
We could use it as a tool if we just suspend it, that's what you think.
But it's still there. We haven't given up on our advocacy for 1%, 2% reform. Yes, Mike. That's all.
It was out there when we had our advocacy and it didn't work.
Yeah.
And I think we have a far stronger case to make based on the analysis we did that it ought to be in that 12% range given all of the cash flow and grant and reimbursement issues, and that this is
I appreciate that.
It made a difference. It would have made a difference, and it hasn't made a difference.
We wanted to bring all the options for you to consider and a rationale as to why we offered those. But we have a motion by Mike Roddy and a second by Judge Boris to eliminate the policy, which is option 3. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? All right, motion to eliminate carries. Yeah, next issue is item 10. It is the State Trial Court Improvement and Modernization Fund allocations. If you recall, there were issues with the fund balance in the IMF, and this body recommended to the council that a plan be developed on how to narrow that gap, and the recommendations developed by the administrative director and others in consultation with the other advisory committees would come back to this body for information. And so we have Judge Jarre here who will discuss the work thus far with respect to the IMF and closing the gap.
Thank you, Zucco. During the lunch hour, I handed out a two-page sheet. It is essentially a memorandum that I sent to the internal chairs of the Judicial Council, who also have become engaged with regard to the projected shortfall in the IMF. The Trial Court Budget Advisory Committee asked the Executive Office to perform a division-by-division reduction scenario based upon the initial projected revenue shortfall of $8.3 million in the IMF in fiscal 14-15, as did the internal chairs who were anxious to sort of get a clear picture of what we were looking at in terms of the damage that would do to these programs, each and every one of which are for the benefit of the trial courts. As the covering memo to the internal chairs, which I copied to you, revealed, the first thing we did was to examine what surpluses may be available or savings might be available in the fund as fiscal 13-14 closed. There were two components that turned out to be significant in comparison with the projected $8.3 million shortfall. And they're sort of highlighted on the second page. I drew some circles to make it easier to walk through it. Essentially, on the second page, insofar as the adjusted fund balance is concerned, it is increased by $3.3 million, representing disencumbered funds. When contracts are entered into, as we all now have come so intimately to know in connection with the 1% trial court fund balance issue, one can encumber funds for the year of encumbrance plus two additional years, but then the funds revert by whatever mechanism the funding originates from. The $3.3 million represents the aggregate dollars associated with previous years' contracts, which were not ultimately required to fully realize those contractual objectives. Farther down that same column, we went through each program on a division-by-division basis in terms of its budget for 13-14 and realized savings, that is to say, expenditures that were less than what was budgeted, aggregating $4.3 million or roughly 5% of the overall IMF fund. The two added together equal roughly $7.6 million, which for fiscal 14-15 represents a near-complete solution for the projected shortfall of $8.3 million, leaving something on the order of $600,000, which is expressed in the far-right column on the second page, the far-right column being essentially what transpired through the budget when DOF declined to cancel out the annual IMF to TCTF transfer of $20 million, and simultaneously we then elected not to recommend that V2 and V3 be transferred in the opposite direction. So that leaves a 616 $1,000 shortfall for 14-15. As I indicated in the memorandum, we have developed a new centralized budgeting process for our entire staff operation that Zlatko put into place as of July 1. The reason being that now that an array of funds that we manage have fund balances that historically existed but are essentially near exhaustion, if not entirely exhausted, we need to have a more precise tool for managing and projecting as a year goes along rather than waiting till the end of the year to reconcile such things as surpluses and disencumbered funds. So that process, which Z is putting into place now, will enable us to monitor on a routine basis surpluses that may develop and disencumbrances that are occurring so that in future years we'll be able to project these things with more precision in advance of the year end. Going forward, we also have the challenge of 15-16 because the projected shortfall in IMF grows in 15-16. So the one-time solution that we have in hand today, which will mean that we don't have to do the percentage cut across the board as was originally envisioned, is something that we will have to address. But we have time because we don't have to make draconian cuts in 14-15, and so there will be an opportunity to examine rationally what's going to be required of us in 15-16 insofar as IMF-funded programs are concerned. So that's sort of the overview. Once again, I drafted this memo for the internal chairs who are not budget experts, as I am not a budget expert, and just drew those lines on the second page to draw your attention to the savings that were recognized and how they reflect in the ultimate bottom line over there on the bottom of the right column. So with that, I'll turn it over to the folks who can provide more detailed information. Kurt Söderlund, Zlatko, Stephen.
You pretty much covered everything. One of the issues that we have here, and I suspect the same for each of the courts, is when you're at the midpoint of the fiscal year, it's your projections are going to be softer, if you will, because you really don't know what's happening with your revenue and with your expenditures. And so with each of the budget liaisons that we have, the council works, that we really sharpen our pencils and talk explicitly with each and every one of them. That's where we identified these savings. Now, will there be some savings next year along these lines? It's probably going to be diminishing more and more like that as our pencils get sharper. So the issue here is essentially for the various committees about a year trying to come up with the prioritization of those projects funded from the IMF.
And if I can answer that, in June when Judge Earl and Zlatko presented before the council, one of the discussions was because of the situation with the IMF fund that it's really important for the council and EMP to maybe develop some priorities for the IMF fund to assist the trial court budget advisory committee subgroup in, you know, taking a look at the IMF and all of the projects that are funded from there. So I think what this allows is an opportunity for EMP to step back and almost immediately come up with some priorities that they can then pass on to you all to then make decisions for 15-16.
Chris?
I have two questions. The 4.3, a comment on that. That's encouraging that you found that amount of savings all of a sudden, so hopefully that will continue. I mean, I don't know. You think it'll be less and less. Why?
Well, because I think through the consolidation that Judge Starr was talking about, you know, to the extent that we can identify savings earlier in the year, we should have a better focus as each year passes along those lines. I think there will always be something, because when you're into contracts, as an example, they're estimates.
My second question is, what does the last of Starr's last paragraph, when you reckon, you know, the following 15-15 budget year, however, will be aided by virtue of the new centralized accounting process now in place?
That was what I was referring to.
Where are they consolidated?
Yeah, I mean, I think what you know, this is speculation somewhat on my part, but I think what will happen is as we have a monitoring tool that we can utilize on an ongoing basis, we're in a better position of scrutinizing budget requests in following years. So we tighten it, tighten it, and tighten it. Previously, with the existing fund balances, they rolled into the next year. None of the money was lost. It was just repurposed in the IMF bucket, so to speak. But now that we have so little by way of fund balances, and most of our funds are going into the red, obviously, on IMF, we have to have a tool that enables us to be much more sharp in scrutinizing things on an ongoing basis.
We're putting all staff together.
Oh, yeah.
We put the onus on the programs to justify to us why a particular contract will actually be expended fully. But it's going to take effort on my staff's part to do that. But it's too tight now to not do it.
Anything and everything when it comes to money. Absolutely.
A decentralized office-by-office budget process is being replaced by a centralized budgeting process in FS.
Okay. Judge Wesley?
This references a 15-16 budget structural shortfall in IMF. Do we have the numbers on that
yet? Bottom right of the spreadsheet. Yeah, the difference between revenues and expenditures.
And will we eventually get a some kind of a document that shows us where the unspent funds in 2014 were, so that we know what programs we approved overfunding for, so that we can look at those programs and see maybe that money continues to go elsewhere.
Yeah, when we go through the review, we give you historical annuals allocation versus actual expenditures. So I just wanted to, there's a few points. Go ahead.
Just to remind you that the Revenue and Expenditure Subcommittee goes through both the IMF and the trust fund, and we'll do that again in the fall. And with an eye on obviously needing to address this structural deficit that the IMF is running under, and part of the materials will be what was the allocation last year and how much did you actually spend. And just for your benefit, again, I keep saying that that committee will get together in the fall, but the committee will change because there will be new appointments to the Budget Advisory Committee. And while those appointments, as I understand it, won't take effect until November, this is a subcommittee that will work throughout the year on this issue. So the makeup of the subcommittee will change after we know who will be on the Budget Advisory Committee going forward.
I had a few points I wanted to make. In terms of, so we have greater clarity on the expenditures, but we don't get the revenues until mid-August. And so, as you can see on that handout, we do show on line 7 that we have a declining revenue. So this is sort of a bad case. I'm afraid to say worst case at this point because I keep seeing them get worse and worse. But we still need to see the revenues, and so the revenues could be adjusted. We're hopefully, you know, we have hit a bottom and we won't see some substantial change. So the reason I say that is because we might need to come back and make some current year adjustments to bring the fund into balance. You saw Judge Jarre circled the continuing $20 million transfer above. Obviously, part of our solution that we proposed to the council and was submitted to the Department of Finance was retaining the $20 million in the IMF so that we could support these expenditures as well as realigning some expenditures there. That does then reduce that 26 to something in the middle teens. We don't know exactly where the revenues are. We still have a problem between, 12 to $16 million, something there that we have to be concerned about. We've, in spite of the review to look at reducing expenditures in 13-14, the budget advisor, the Revenue Expenditure Review Committee added money for Lan Wan, if you recall that issue, so that all 58 courts are in that, and that has a changing expenditure pattern, and by adding the four additional courts, three of them being very large, some of our largest courts, has done nothing but put greater pressure on the expenditure side. So we have to think about that in terms of meeting all of our needs. So clearly the priorities of the council are important for us to understand where everything falls. And finally, the Department of Finance has indicated in their in the January budget, this issue of looking at the IMF and their sense of priorities whether that be appropriate or not. They are, they have some authority in terms of what they propose in the budget, and is, and notwithstanding our council and our branch's priorities of retaining those $20 million in the fund, they did not see, you know, to approve that, and so we obviously have to then work with them and their interest in looking at that fund. So we have a lot of sort of intersecting factors, revenues, pressures on expenditures, council priorities, what now has been told to us, you know, are working on administration priorities. So, you know, we have a lot of work ahead of us, but this is a good step for at least the 14-15 fiscal year.
Judge Jarre, can I ask you or Jody or Kurt, what is the recommendation on how to address the $600,000 hole?
Yeah, there's a jury management grant program that is $600,000, which it is viewed as something that we can essentially not use this year, not disband it or eliminate it, but simply not make any grants to any courts associated with it. It has, I think, to do with tech enhancements to different jury summoning systems. You've taxed my fund of knowledge on that, but essentially it's a grant program which would just essentially be suspended for a year.
Any questions for Judge Jarre or Kurt or Jody? All right, thank you for the update.
We are about 2 minutes. About 2 minutes left before our time is for the meeting is come to an end. Do we have reports or informational issues that any of the members would like to raise at this point? We have David Yamasaki would like to raise something.
Yeah, so there's one of the expenses that we incur is cost of the workers' compensation program, the judicial branch workers' compensation program. And the way it works is that the 57 courts that are part of the program pay into a umbrella program related to workers' comp. And that calculation in terms of what the premiums are for each court are based on two things. One is the claims that are submitted by each court, and two, the positions that are on the 7A report that each court submits. As the outgoing chair of that particular working group, before handing it over to Tanya, what I wanted us to do is take another look at how those premiums are being calculated, because for historically, the way that the premiums have been calculated were based on 7A data that is a little old, I would say a year, year and a half old. And part of the reason is that the numbers that are put together and the rates that are applied to them take a bit of time to calculate. But I'm hoping that, that the – and it's based on a three-year average of both employees and claims that are submitted. And so because many courts have changed their personnel in the last year, either going up or going down, I thought it would be helpful to take the 7A data that's a little more current than perhaps a year, year and a half old. So I'm hoping that this is something that this group can perhaps look into, because it will change the premiums that each court is having to pay towards the program.
But they will be more realistic, and they will represent what we are currently in.
We can put that on a future agenda. Any other thoughts, suggestions? All right, thank you again all for joining us today. We'll let you know. We don't yet know when our next meeting will be. It'll depend on what the council does in July, though.
Thank you, everybody. Appreciate it.